Lee Harris was born in Johannesburg in 1936. A writer, performer, a legend of activism and a bastion of kindness and compassion. In 1972, he opened the first ever head shop in England on Portobello Road in London. It was called Alchemy. He published Brainstorm Comics and Homegrown, Europe's first ever cannabis magazine. That was in the 1970s. In 2016, Lee ran for London Mayor, representing the Cannabis is Safer Than Alcohol Party, gaining tens of thousands of votes. The list goes on. Lee is rich in stories, adventures, and wisdom. Now, a quick apology. The audio recording of our conversation corrupted, so I had to use the audio from the video, and I can't adjust individual volume levels. So you're stuck with my loud brashness being a little louder than Lee's nice and gentle voice. Sorry about that. If you'd rather watch the video, it's available on YouTube and Facebook. All right then, I hope you enjoy another episode of Grow Street Journal. Thank you so much, Lee, for inviting me to come and speak to you at your beautiful cottage here today.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to meet you, Francis.
The pleasure is very much shared. I've heard a lot about you. I think it's fair to say you're the godfather of cannabis.
I've been around a lot.
And we, of course, met a few years ago before I'd started on my cannabis journey, or when I'd just started out, at a market in London.
Yes, in one of the oldest markets in the country, Wellclose Market, yes.
Yeah.
When I was standing for the Mayor of London.
Of course, to be honest, I'd much rather see you mayoring over the city than Sadiq, but yeah, what can we do, hey?
Well, it's nice to meet them all. He needs a bit of a good advisor, especially for cannabis.
Yes, yeah, well, I mean, he's had cannabis, the agenda, forced on him, really, hasn't he? So you would have been the right man for that, given everything that's been going on.
Yes, and I was pleased when I stood at 12:35 in City Hall, and the final count, and because it was in alphabetical order, and I went on stage, and I'm between Sadiq Khan and Zach Goldsmith, you see. So that was quite interesting. And when they did the count of people, and the first one was the Green Party, which got a nicer cheer, and as it went through, then they did Zach Goldsmith, and that was 900,000. There was hardly a cheer, and then they called out my results, and I thought, I'm hearing wrong. I've seen the video. There was a huge big cheer. So I'm so pleased. It might be the Green Party and the Women's Equality Party, and all that.
That's brilliant.
And I had the experience of meeting Paul Golding, who turned his back on Sadiq Khan. And after the election, he came up to me and he said, "I'm glad you beat the BNP."
Oh, yes. So,
but I actually got to know Paul Golding over a period there. And I actually at the end shook his hand and said, "Lovely to meet you."
Did you get on with him, or was it?
I did have a little joke with him. I asked him if Paul Golding was a Jewish name. But in politics, you learn this too. When I met Nigel Farage earlier, the first thing he said to me is, I've read about you. So, and then I asked him a question about cannabis, and he said, "I've got enough on my plate to worry about cannabis." With all his minions around there. So it was quite nice to meet people who have opposite views to you, and to be accepted as a cannabis candidate.
It's a big, big step. Very, very progressive.
Yes, because we had the cannabis logo on the voting paper, on the booklet given out to 6 million people, so that was nice.
So it's raising good awareness.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that if we get a party that changes it, because the common person
doesn't really care about cannabis, I think. I mean, they should, in my opinion. Yes. But so a party focusing on that, you're going to get a lot of people that already understand, but I guess perhaps struggle to convert the people that are, they may not have a full picture on what cannabis is, yes, or can be used for.
Well, when I was campaigning in London, I had to get 10 signatures from each of the boroughs of people who were on the electoral register. So I had to go to places with Team Lee, to like Croydon and various, and be in the street and approach strangers. An amazing, many people have an enlightened view. And the place we thought we'd have the most difficulty was the City of London. And my daughter and someone else did. And the quickest, we got more of the 10 signatures faster in the City of London, because we went to the flats in the Barbican where the rich retired folk, and they were all interested in legalising cannabis.
Nice.
Ironically.
Found the gold mine there.
Yes.
That's brilliant. So you had to go and get, what, 10?
10 signatures. To get your nomination, you had to get 10 signatures from each of the 33 boroughs in London.
And they're just normal citizens?
Yes, and it's checked on the electoral register. And if they're not on the electoral register, that doesn't count. So we had to end. It was touch and go. They were saying at the electoral office, if we don't get it, we'll give you back your deposit. So there was an all-night session, and we managed to get the correct ones in just before the deadline was on.
Love it.
It was touch and go. It was quite tense.
I bet. Yeah.
And my legs were sore for all the walking around I did around Islington and Battersea and various parts. I got to know London.
I bet, yeah. I mean, it must have been a very busy, taxing time. It was only a few years ago, wasn't it?
Yes, May 2016.
Yeah, well,
just over 2 years. Yeah.
Wow, that must have been exciting.
Yeah, and then I had the fun of being in the shop afterwards, and so many people coming up to me and saying, "I voted for you." And then I used to say, because with second preference votes, I had 88,000 votes. So
wow.
That's good. So when
that's
people say they voted for me, I said, thank you, you're most probably the 1,000th person who's told me. So that was pleased. As ITV News said, Rags Martel on there, he said, talking about cannabis is clearly a winner. So
yeah.
I think it's important that it was out in the open.
And that's
after
only
50
improved,
years,
years.
It's about time.
Yeah, I mean, that's... It's easy for me, coming to this new, to forget that you've been doing this kind of stuff and under different conditions or perceptions and laws for decades. And
yes, I got involved in this struggle, and I went on the first legalised pot rally in 67, and because I dressed up, it was flower power, and had a wreath of flowers in my hair, Zapata moustache, and a badge saying no search without a warrant, and a kaftan. So I was much photographed, and the next day I was on the back page of The Guardian, all the beautiful people, and on Panorama Hippies. Took me about 50 years to get a copy off the BBC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, oh, that sounds wonderful.
And then I later opened a head shop, and then in 75 I published a head comic called Brainstorm Comics about the psychedelic alchemist Chester B. Hackenbush. And in 77 to 82, I published Europe's first cannabis magazine, which I went to launch in New York and would deliver twice a year to Amsterdam, and made lots of friends. And it was very difficult getting distribution because news agents wouldn't take it. It was very difficult to find people to print it. It was like a Samizdat, like a Russian pamphlet that they had, an underground pamphlet. So, and it was a homegrown, it was called, and it was done in this very cottage, in the kitchen. The artists used to draw around the table. We used to write articles or commission. And of course, it all had to be typeset, a letter set, long before the computer came. So it was we did it as a homegrown pursuit.
That's
as a labour of love. and I published two a year over that period.
Two a year?
And altogether published nearly 200,000 copies of it.
That's
and
amazing.
40 years later, it's now online, and there's people who contact me and say they read it in up north somewhere when they were 16 and had a big impression on their lives. So,
that's incredible. I got so much time for that. That sounds great. What made you want to start the magazine?
Well, originally it was 77, 10 years after Flower Power, and I wanted to do a celebration. And I originally wanted to hire the Roundhouse with Rajaram and Quintessence. And then we were going to do a program for the event. And the program, I decided, why not publish a magazine about it? And, well, when it first came out and I was interviewed in LBC, so every half hour on the news that Saturday on Capital Radio was lifting the lid on pot, or off pot, lifting the lid. So it was a coming out, and was, and soon after that, I had a call one Sunday from the Sun newspaper, where I was going to the park with my young daughter, telling me there's a Labour MP somewhere in the Rother Valley who's written to the Home Secretary asking them to ban my magazine and prosecute me for inciting people to break the law. All I'd said was, you put your finger in the ground 6 inches and you plant a seed. Those were primitive times. And when a copy of the magazine was found in a Virgin retail shop in Glasgow, I've got the cutting here, it said, shocking discovery in Glasgow record shop. Or, this horror on the bookshelf is a nasty threat to your children. Though it was quite intellectual.
Mm.
And our first customer on subscription was the Home Office Dangerous Drugs branch. So I knew that everything I was written was going to be read by the Home Office.
It's quite scary that they seek to restrict and control access to words on the paper.
Yes, and the ridiculous thing, when they brought it to trial, the magazine was called an obscene publication. And there's nothing obscene about it. Though in the first issue, without even thinking about it, I published full frontal male nudity at a festival with two guys coming out of water. I didn't even realise till later.
So it probably had to be on the top shelf of all the other magazines.
Yes, yes.
And you mentioned a trial. So and you showed me this book when I first came here today.
Written by a policeman, Neil Woods, with J.S. Raffaele.
Yeah, he was undercover, wasn't he? He was an undercover policeman.
Yes, he was an undercover policeman.
But what's interesting specifically was the first chapter?
Yes, the first chapter.
Where, let's see. Do you remember where it was? It was really interesting.
It's the first chapter that goes, I see Soho's Pepper Grays. Here it is. This is it here. It begins here.
Oh, so it's actually literally the first sentence of this book. Lee Harris never meant to start the British war on drugs.
Yes, that's quite an honour.
Wow. Well,
I went to the launch of the book there, and for the first time in my life, I gave a policeman a big hug.
Did you know that he had written this?
Yes, because he invited me to the launch, and I met his wife, so I was glad that there's a policeman on law enforcement against prohibition.
Yeah.
Because that's a big step. And I think we should break the barrier where the police had to do some awful things. And anyone who was raided, like I was. I used to paint slogans in South Africa when I was 18 on the top of buildings late at night with Indian and Africans, and I could have gone to prison for it. And we used to paint police raids, police state. So I came to England here, there's raiding, there's stop and search of black people. Homes were raided, you couldn't walk through Earl's Court in 67, 68 without being stopped and searched at night.
Oh, wow.
It was a big backlash.
Yeah.
from the swinging 60s.
So what happened with, why did Neil write that? Why did he start the war on drugs? Tell me about
this. Well, because that's how I became involved in drugs. I was 27 and I hardly drank alcohol and I smoked lots of cigarettes, I suppose. And I'd never taken a drug of any sort. And when I tried a PEP pill the first thing at that time, I was up for 4 days. So I didn't like the come down. But I saw in the West End the PEP pill craze in the mods. I saw these hundreds of kids at the weekends, 16, 15, 16, 17. Because at 18 you were too old to be a mod. And they were taking down at sixpence a pill, 80 or 90 pills a weekend.
What are they?
They're amphetamines.
Oh, I see.
And they came from Smith Klein, a French, and they were stolen, or batches that you could get off a Greek guy in Good Street called Pills Paradise. So everyone was pep pilled. And when the clubs closed at 5 o'clock in the morning, Wardour Street was full of 1,000 stone kids, what they called blocked up on pills. And that's how they ended up on the seaside, where they would go afterwards to Brighton or Clacton, and then there would be the mods and rockers. So I went with a guy who had problems to his home that one Sunday morning, and there was the Labour MP for Paddington, Ben Parkin, who'd made a big name for himself in exposing Ruckmanism, property racketeering in the area, with Ruckman was buying this property, getting rid of the sitting tenants and putting in the new wave of Windrush generation in one room, whole families. So he made that reputation. And he said to me, look, I will ask questions in Parliament, but if any journalist wants to know, can I give them your number? And the next few days I got a call from Anne Sharpley, who was the top reporter of the Evening Standard in London. And I took her on a tour of all the mod clubs. And the next Monday had the photo of her hand like this with pills. I see Soho's pep pill craze. And the clubs were all empty that week. And that helped bring in the Misuse of Drugs Act 1964, which banned amphetamine. And was for the first time possession was made a crime. And my friend who ran the Scene Club was good to me. He was raided and all the mods dropped their pills on the floor, and he did 15 months for running a disorderly house. And I did an affidavit for him and I went to see him in prison. And I thought, God, what have I done? I'm down in a scientific paper mixing the medicine as the moral crusader who started it off. So, and then a little later, at 27 in Oxford Street, walking with someone late at night, I had my first spliff. Because before I didn't know how to inhale.
Just keep and up.
That changed everything. And then instead of being a prohibitionist and a moralist, because as a left-wing young man, that seemed the right thing to do. But I fought against then prohibition. And I help people on heroin and difficult problems.
Good for you. This lady that came and you gave the tour, did you know that it was going to be portrayed in a bad way, or did you think it was going to be?
No, it was. And in fact, her writing was beautiful. I have a piece of it, two pieces. The second piece was she visits Pill Paradise with this Irish guy and myself, you see. And she wrote beautifully. It was. And we became great friends with her. She was a Beaverbrook protege, and she was the original reporter on the actual Windrush in 1953, where the first came on the boat with the first West Indians, and was quite a wonderful woman. I helped her on many other stories there. Yeah. We became great friends.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes.
And so it was all this that kicked off. This was before you
Let me say, some professor in a paper said that I destroyed the Northern Soul scene, because pep pills were very popular for the dancing with the Northern Soul scene.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it's in a paper called Mixing the Medicine.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have thought that by them making these drugs illegal, that prohibition doesn't seem to be effective at restricting the supply of drugs.
Yes, and built up a big black market. and I know people at that time who would go to Brixton to score and be tied up in some backyard and all their money taken off them, and criminalising so many law-abiding people of different backgrounds. In fact, I don't know if I should say it, but there was a young student at Oxford, because there were a lot of students in 67 at Oxford, and this young student sent some cannabis to a friend of his at his home in a parcel, and unfortunately the mother opened it and saw it and got in touch with the police. Well, the student who did the silly thing became a director of public prosecutions, and he's now the Brexit man in the Labour government, in the Labour opposition at the moment. So I mean, he's many people, and the trouble is that these people might have done it at public school, but when they grow up or become MPs,